A very happy Friday to all of you. I hope you have a fantastic weekend as well, and that weekend includes time spent at your home congregation with your brothers and sisters in Christ, worshiping, fellowshipping, studying, serving, praying, praising, encouraging to love and good deeds, and being encouraged. That's what church is all about. Everybody needs a home congregation. If you don't have one, go out and find one and get plugged in, stay plugged in. If you're actively looking right now for a place and you're within driving distance of the Elkhart East building, we cordially invite you to come and check us out. We're going to open our Bibles to 1 Samuel chapter 28 today. And with this, we move into the last story of the life of King Saul. And we have some dates we can put to this, I believe. I believe the 20th year of King Saul started on the first day of the seventh month in 1018 BC. And that this was also a sabbatical year beginning. It marked the beginning of a year where the Israelis were not going to be involved in grain production or grain planting. And then the next spring, there wouldn't be any grain to be harvested, anything like that. That was the way their system worked. 6 years of work, a seventh year is taken off, and it's always from fall to fall. And so everything should have been very peaceful in Israel, but it's not. Instead, this is what we read. Chapter 28, in those days, the Philistines gathered their forces for war to fight against Israel. I think the Philistines sensed that this would be a really good time to take on the Israeli kingdom and defeat them. I think they sensed that Saul was weakened by David no longer being part of his army, that there was like this infighting that had been going on there at the tail end of their time together, and that David has now abandoned the cause along with a whole bunch of other Israelis. And so I think the Philistines thought that they could just come in and roll over the kingdom. Plus, I think that they're going to plunder all of the food stores, the grain stores, that the Israelis have just finished putting up in this calendar year to prepare them for the sabbatical layoff of work. It would be a great time, strategically speaking, for them to take the Israeli grain and force them into starvation. So when the five Philistine city-states start making their arrangements to go against the Israeli territory, Achish, who's the king of Gath, said to David, "Understand that you and your men are to go with me in the army." So David has been functioning as a protected person in King Achish's territory. It's true that David is way down at Ziklag to the south, and he's been carrying on his own operations against enemies of Israel, but Achish knows nothing about that. All he thinks about is that David is a tough guy, he's got a tough military force with him, and they would be perfect to use against the Israelis. Now that puts David in a spot, because David doesn't want to betray what's really going on with his life. He's not fighting against Israelis. He has no intention of fighting against Israelis. But Achish expects him to. So what does David do? He bides for time. He puts on a role. David said to Achish, "Very well, you shall know what your servant can do." And Achish said to David, very well, I will make you my bodyguard for life. So he effectively promotes him to the number one position in the command staff to keep protection over Achish himself. Now, little note here to keep in mind. Samuel had died. Now, he had died probably as much as 2 years earlier, during the earliest part of David running from Saul. All Israel had mourned for him, and they'd buried him in Ramah, his own city. So that means Ramathaim Zophim, which is in Ephraim territory, not the Ramah that is in Benjamite territory. That's a very important distinction always to be made. But here comes the extra note. Saul had put the mediums and the necromancers out of the land. That's important to the story that's coming up. Saul had spent a lot of his effort in his kingdom of running occult practices underground, making them not practice those things out in the open. And so those two things are going to go together in a little bit. Samuel's dead, and necromancers, mediums, those that claim they can contact the spirit world, including dead spirits, they are not in the public realm. Verse 4. The Philistines assembled and came and encamped at Shunem. Now, Shunem is on the south side of the hill of Morah. Now, this is the exact same place where the invaders had encamped when Gideon was a judge and took them on. Remember, he had his 300 guys, and they came off of the hill of Morah down onto the invader encampment and routed them by God's supernatural ability. Well, the Philistines have encamped at that exact same spot because it's a perfect place to raid the grain stores throughout the entirety of the Jezreel Valley, which is the northern breadbasket for all of Israel. So the Philistines have moved on the northern food stores, and King Saul has to respond. Saul gathered all Israel, and they encamped at Gilboa. Now, Gilboa is not one peak of a mountain. It's actually a ridgeline that is a few miles to the southeast from this Philistine encampment at Shunem. Mount Gilboa stretches on the south side of the Jezreel Valley from about Jezreel, very close to Jezreel, all the way down to the flatlands of the upper Jordan Valley. And so Saul is gathering his people in a region where they can kind of keep an eye on the Philistines off to the northwest. Verse 5, when Saul saw the army of the Philistines, he was afraid, and his heart trembled greatly. He is upset because that is a lot of Philistines. That is a massive amount of Philistines encamped over there across the Jezreel Valley from him. And he's also got another problem. Verse 6, when Saul inquired of he who is did not answer him, either by dreams or by the Urim or by prophets. So Saul is being totally shut off from any support by God. And it's been going on for a long time. God is not talking to him in dreams, which seems to indicate at one time he did. He's not talking to him through the Urim and the Thummim, which are the two stones in the pocket behind the breastpiece of the high priest. According to Jewish tradition, which I think is accurate, you'd pull them out, ask a question, And then the designated answer would be indicated by the stone glowing. And so this is how we would know God's not talking to him through these things. No supernatural action. He also doesn't have any of God's prophets talking to him. So he's in a mess. And so he decides to do something here that breaks all the rules that he's been told. Saul said to his servants, "Seek out for me a woman who is a medium, that I may go to her and inquire of her." Now I'm going to break into the story here because we've got a lot of things happening right around the same time. I don't know how long it takes for Saul's spies to track down this medium, but it probably took them a little bit of time because these guys are all underground. You have to probably jump through a lot of covert hoops in order to find a person that will tap into the spirit world for you because of Saul tamping down on all of this. So here's another thing that we need to keep in mind. 1 Samuel chapter 28. So just the next chapter. It's one of those things where when you're telling a story, sometimes you tell one part of the story sequentially, and then you have to jump back and tell a different part of the story. I like it more of get this snippet and then go over and see another snippet that's happening around the same time. So chapter 29 starts with the Philistine mobilization a little bit farther away than what we just talked about. It says, "Now the Philistines had gathered all their forces at Aphek." Now Aphek, this Aphek, is at the extreme western end of the Jezreel Valley. We'd probably be better placing it at the extreme western end of the plains of Megiddo. So it is the entry point into this long breadbasket in northern Israel. So that's where they first entered in. That's probably when Saul and his people mobilized and headed up to Mount Gilboa. And so this is what we hear about the Israelis' encampment in this part of the story. The Israelis were encamped by the spring that is in Jezreel. Now that spring is the same spring that is told in the story of Gideon. And it's just about a mile or so from the walls of Jezreel. And it is just to the south of Mount Gilboa. So probably this is the forward encampment of the Israelis, just a couple of miles from the encampment of the Philistines at Shunem, because they move from Aphek to Shunem. And so now you've got the military forces really close to each other, and they're making their preparations for eventually engaging in battle. The things that we're talking about right this moment is probably about 5 days before the battle. Verse 2, "As the lords of the Philistines were passing over by hundreds and by thousands, and David and his men were passing on in the rear with Achish," that tells me that Achish is probably the junior member of the five kings of the Philistines. He's probably the most recent to the throne or the youngest of the five because he's bringing up the rear. And so David is with him because David really wasn't given a choice, was he? "The commanders of the Philistines," so that'd be the other four, "said, 'What are these Hebrews doing here?' And Achish said to the commanders of the Philistines, 'Isn't this David, the servant of Saul, king of Israel, who's been with me now for days and years?'" The Hebrew seems to indicate for these last 2 years. So think of calendar years. We read earlier that he was in Philistine territory for a year and 4 months. So over these two calendar years is what seems to be indicated. So he's been here with me for all this time since he deserted to me. Now, I found no fault in him to this day. So he defends David being in his bodyguard because he's been in that position for 2 years or been in Gath territory for 2 years and presumably attacking Israeli targets. That wasn't what was happening, but that's what Achish thought. And so Achish says, no, he's on our side. I can vouch for him. Verse 4, but the commanders of the Philistines were angry with him. They can't believe how naive he is. And he is naive, folks, because David was not attacking the enemies of the Philistines. He was attacking the enemies of Israel during this last couple of years, or last two calendar years. So the commanders said to him, you send this man back that he may return to the place to which you've assigned him, you know, back to Ziklag. He shall not go down with us to battle, lest in the battle he become an adversary to us. For how could this fellow reconcile himself to his Lord? Would it not be with the heads of the men here? Is not this David of whom they sang to one another in dances, Saul has struck his thousands and David his tens of thousands? So the four more senior commanders of the Philistines say, you have got to be kidding me. This is David, the hero of Israel. Yes, he's been on the outs with King Saul for the last 2 years, but what better way to get back in good graces with King Saul than to start running a traitorous behind the front lines attack against us at the last second. So you tell him to go away. You send him back to Ziklag. Verse 6. Then Achish called David and said to him, as he who is lives, you have been honest, and to me it seems right that you should march out and in with me in the campaign. For I have found nothing wrong in you from the day of your coming to me to this day. Which, again, you have to acknowledge, this guy, he does not understand the reality of this. I don't know if David had already thought that what he would have to do when it came to the fight that is that he'd have to fight for Israel, because I just don't see him killing Israelis for Philistines. It just doesn't make any sense. I don't know if he'd come to that conclusion already and was just like, Lord will have to sort this out. But Achish has convinced himself that David would attack Israelis for him. And he's wrong. And so he confesses to David, nevertheless, the Lords do not approve of you. So I've been outvoted. So go back now. Go peaceably, that you may not displease the lords of the Philistines. Now, David is playing a role at this point. And this little part right here does make me suspect that he had already planned what he was going to do. And it was going to be to the benefit of Israel and to the detriment of the Philistines in the battle. And now that's being kicked in the head. So David said to Achish, but what have I done? What have you found in your servant from the day I entered your service until now that I may not go and fight against the enemies of my lord the king? So he wants to stay. Achish answered David and said, I know that you are blameless in my sight as if you were an angel of the gods. Nevertheless, the commanders of the Philistines have said, he shall not go up with us to battle. Now then, rise early in the morning with the servants of your lord who came with you, and start early in the morning, depart as soon as you have light. So as I said, I believe that was on the fifth day before the battle, while Saul is assessing things from over at Mount Gilboa, and I think Saul is coming to the conclusion that he needs to get inside spiritual information And apparently he's going to need a medium to do that. And his men need to track somebody down. So I think all of that's happening at the same time. Verse 11 moves to the next morning, which, of course, is the next Jewish day, which means 4 days before the battle. So David set out with his men early in the morning to return to the land of the Philistines, but the Philistines went up to Jezreel. That's probably where they moved their encampment, to Shunem. It is at this point that the 1 Chronicles 12 passage tells about some of the other men that are with David during this story. 1 Chronicles 12, 19. Some of the men of Manasseh, that's the tribe of Manasseh, deserted to David when he came with the Philistines for the battle against Saul. Now, when they came up to this area, they've passed through and will pass through it again on the way back home to Ziklag, a part of Manasseh territory. And so that seems to be when these Manassites, they defect to David. Yet they did not help, he did not help them, for the rulers of the Philistines took counsel and sent him away, saying, at peril to our own heads, he will desert to his master Saul. So same story then that we're telling from the first Samuel passage. As he went to Ziklag, these men of Manasseh deserted to him, and you have their names. They helped David against the band of raiders. That's about to come up. For they were all mighty men of valor and were commanders in the army. For from day to day, men came to David to help him until there was a great army, like a great army of God. So David is still getting more and more people joining him rather than staying with King Saul. So that's 4 days before the battle. David leaves the area up in the north, the Jezreel Valley, and he heads south, and it's going to take him a couple of days travel to get back to Ziklag. 1 Samuel chapter 30. Now, when David and his men came to Ziklag on the third day, so that's the third day from when they started, so fourth day before the battle is day number one, that's when they left. Third day before the battle, that's a travel day. Second day before the battle, that's the third day of travel, and the day they arrived at Ziklag. So when David and his men came to Ziklag on the third day, the Amalekites had made a raid against the Negev and against Ziklag. So you remember, David, for the last year and 4 months, has been carrying on military operations, raiding operations, against various non-Israeli groups down in this Negev, this southern desert. And Amalekites are among those that he's been hitting. The Amalekites are the slave traders, the kidnappers. They are not good people. Well, guess what? They came and raided Ziklag. They overcame Ziklag. They burned it with fire. And they'd taken captive the women and all who were in it, both great, small and great. They killed no one, but they carried them off and went their way. They didn't kill anyone because they're all worth something. They're all potential sales products. They are slaves. When Dave and his men came to the city, they found it burned with fire and their wives and sons and daughters taken captive, and plus whatever home guard had been left there. All of it has been taken. And so everybody is upset. David and the people who were with him raised their voices. They wept until they had no more strength to weep. David's two wives also had been taken captive, Ahinoam of Jezreel, Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel. David was greatly distressed. Why? Not just simply because His own family members had been taken. He was also distressed, for the people spoke of stoning him, because all the people were bitter in soul, each for his own sons and daughters. So these folks believe it's David's fault. It's David's fault that their wives, their kids, have been taken, been captured, kidnapped. They're going to be sold into slavery to the highest bidder. It's David's fault, and they want retribution against him. But we are told by the prophet writer, David strengthened himself in he who is his God. So he basically gets his strength up and realizes we have to do something about this by God's hand. And so David said to Abiathar, the priest, the son of Ahimelech. Remember, Abiathar was the young man that survived the massacre at Nob. And when he left there and came to David, he brought with him the priestly garments, the ephod that has the Urim and the Thummim in it. Now, Saul has not been able to get the Urim and Thummim to work for him for quite some time, but now it's not even in his ability to use it. So it's here with David. So David said, bring me the ephod. And so Abiathar brought the ephod to David, and David inquired of he who is, shall I pursue after this band? Shall I overtake them? So two questions to be answered, yes or no. And God said, pursue, for you shall surely overtake and shall surely rescue. So David gets God's direction to chase these kidnappers, these slave traders, even farther south. So David set out, and the 600 men who were with him, they came to the brook Besor, where those who were left behind stayed. So we have only a small contingent that goes with him. But this keeps him far from where Saul is going to be killed.